हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्त वृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
No page numbers, so 15:8 from the third lesson. Lesson 3, 15:8. The living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another, as air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. Right? Because the air, as it goes, it picks up something, you have the fragrance and everything, and then again it goes. Right? Suffering while in the body and changing the body is called struggle for existence. Right? So what I was saying before about struggle, so this is now the very specific detail of what struggle means. The individual soul is transmigrating from one body to another, and his present body and present activities are the background of his next body. One gets a different body according to karma, and he has to quit this body in due course. So what he's in this body means that is there from what was last body. Right, so the last body was the background of this body. This body is the background of the next one. Okay. It is stated here that the subtle body, which carries the conception of the next body, develops another body in the next life. This process of transmigrating from one body to another and struggling while in the body is called karshati, or struggle for existence. Right? So here then is that one has to struggle means, well, one has to go through these temporary situations of one body to the next. Right? And then there's also, of course, in the struggle of taking care of the body. But that we're kind of like used to. But the point is one doesn't have to be going through the struggle of actually having to change from one body to another. Does that make sense? That's not actually necessary. Okay. Right. The subtle body you carry, so you have a mentality. So according to that, then you require certain senses to be able to carry out that mentality, right? And carrying, and so that means that senses needs a particular kind of body to be in. You know what I mean? So therefore, the next body is created by our mental state now. So whatever it is, when we end the body, then that mental state, that will collect the consensus, then the body goes around that, then you have the next birth. Does that make sense? You know, pretty straightforward. Okay. So that's called struggle for existence.
Right.
Yes?
Regarding the end of the existence, when we die, that's what we remember.
Yes.
Sometimes, like, it is a chance. I've been practicing, being devotee, and then die of, I don't know, car crash or whatever, and who knows what you said about at the last moment, what about the whole previous?
Oh, generally is what you think, is what are you going to think about? You're going to think about something that you find as comforting, you know, or a shelter, or something you're attached to or worried about.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's not that, you know, you're just about to have a car crash and that sets off, you know, thinking of, you know, year six, serial 11 of Friends. You know what I'm saying?
This is just like that episode where...
they're going in the corner. Yeah, so, you know what I'm saying? It's going to be something, there's going to be an attachment to, you know, attachment to somebody or something.
So it will be the biggest.
Huh?
So it will be
whatever's the biggest, because you have a very short time, so it's very limited. So then you're very practical, you go to whatever's the biggest. So that's the point. If Krishna is the biggest, you'll go there. And if it's not, if the family is, or your position, or so, then it'll go there. That's why it's always said as add Krishna to everything, because then you see that Krishna is the important element. The problem is not that you're doing other things. The problem is as if that's more important or equal to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Taking care of the family, having money, having that's not the problem. The problem is if you think they have a value separate from Krishna, and that Krishna is not the main value. You understand? So Krishna is the main thing, and this is one way to express that. Using your money nicely for Krishna, or engaging the family in Krishna consciousness. You know, keeping things nice for Krishna. That's the main. Then these others are just ways to do it. Right? The Brahmachari does that also. He keeps his little corner, his locker, or whatever he has, and he keeps his little stuff nicely because it's Krishna's place. Right, you know, they give him, you know, 10 rupees to go out and, you know, for this and that, to catch the boat and all that. So he uses it for service, right? Or he walks and buys sweets, like that, you know, which he offers to Krishna, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So it's the same principle. So if that's always that Krishna is the essential point, not that this is important to me and I've connected it to Krishna, that's the beginning. But it should come to Krishna is what's important. So if Krishna is important, then and everything that's important, Krishna will be what will be thought of. Does that make sense?
And Srila Prabhupada said that whenever you left, Lord Chaitanya will cover.
It means you have that aspect, is that because if we're sincerely endeavoring, Krishna will, because he is knowledgeable and remembers and forgetfulness, but that's based on us. We have that kind of sincerity, then Krishna will take care. But in any case, one won't fall down, you know, out of the devotional process, even if one takes birth again. But if one is distracted by material things, those are more important, you know, like that, or take shelter there, then one will go there. So there's every chance, because of piety, one will go to the heavenly planets. You know what I'm saying? You know, because you'll have family there, you'll have wealth there, you'll have everything there. You know what I'm saying? And you know, I was going to say the thing you won't have to worry about is Hitler on acid, but then you might have, you know, Moshe Sura or one of these other asuras, you know, like that. So, you know, yeah, it's just same scene, just better quality, you know, instead of the, you know.
There is a time when Nahusha, Indra was hiding, Nahusha was there.
Yeah.
He became a tyrant.
Yeah. So it happens. It happens. Yeah. Right, so in other words, it's still the material world. But it's a better quality material world. You know? So then, you know, yeah.
Gold chains?
Yeah, gold chains, like that. So, how do you say?
Bling bling.
Yeah. The bling has fragrance. So, yeah. But this is all called the struggle for existence. So even if one's on the heavenly planets or any of these other situations, higher or lower, it's still a struggle because you have to change bodies. So that's a problem. That's always going to be a problem. So that was the point. When living and he misuses his independence, he struggles very hard in the material world. So he means he's constantly changing bodies. Right, but that the point was being made before of the oneness is that because there is no material body, so it's infallible. So one is always on the spiritual platform. Right, there's no duality. Right. Okay. Yeah.
Duality is, it's just a misconception in us. There is actually no duality anywhere.
It's all the Lord's purpose, but because we don't see the Lord, it's just like if we're looking at a principle, then two of seemingly opposing details don't have, they're not opposing, they're harmonious. But if we don't see the principle, then they're just opposing elements. So what's happening is that the conditioning, we just see details. Right? So therefore, then there's always this hot, cold, that. If it's temperature, then yes, there's hot and there's cold. So but if you're not looking at the principle of temperature, you're looking at, so then it's too hot or it's too cold. Or,
so we increase the field and then we see that it's all part of the same thing.
Yes. So the point is you add God. Yes. So as soon as you add God, then it's harmonious. So then there's a oneness to it. Because it's all harmonious in that it's going according to God's will. Right? But the variety doesn't change. The individuality doesn't change. It's just the use of independence. Right? Because God's independent. He doesn't have to interact with others. But He likes to. Right? That's where the pleasure is. So in the same way as our independence, we like to act separate from the Lord. And we'll say, no, but I'm interacting with everybody else. But we're interacting with everybody else for our own purpose. We're not acting with everybody else actually for a higher purpose. Does that make sense? We have a friend because we're lonely. It's not that they're lonely, so we go out looking for lonely people.
And that's why we're afraid when... That's why we make God impersonal, because if He's a person, He actually cares what we're doing.
Yeah, that is the problem.
That's the problem.
Yeah. So, most they'll get is He's a rule maker. So those who are attached to rules and are comfortable in following rules, then that's very good. If you don't follow the rules, then of course, you know, then I say, the devil has, has a spot for you.
Yeah.
like that. But the point is no, it's a person. That's why the rules are there. Because if it's rules, then you can, then it's a matter, okay, you have to follow them or not. So people who have those modes, it'll be easy. Those who have an organized life, rules are good. Those who don't, it's a problem. Right? But even if you have organized, you're following the rules, so it's good enough. You know what I'm saying? Like you see, deists generally tend to be very organized people.
Mm. Yes.
You know, like that, because they're organizing things, because God's not. Yeah. You know, he is beyond, so he's not controlling. I'm controlling it. You know, ultimately, of course, he's there, but I'm the one controlling the material world. You know, so yes, he's the Lord of the spiritual world, and he, you know, gives his mercy, and he gives his benedictions and all that, and by his grace you can go there. But while you're here, then I'm in charge.
This is my place.
Yeah, you know, so that's the whole thing. So that's the difficulty with these things, is that it's rules, but the point is there's the rule maker. And the rule maker, if he's a person, then that would mean, why did he make the rules like that? Rather than just, he's God, we don't discuss the personal, and there's rules. So what's in between, we don't really worry about. You know what I'm saying? It's unspoken. You know what I'm saying? Just like culturally, there's so many things that they're unspoken. You know what I'm saying? People get up and go to the bathroom. You don't ask what happened. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like that. It's just unspoken. People know the whole process, but at the same time as they don't apply it to the situation. You know what I'm saying? So that's what they'll do in the religious process. Is that God's there? He made the laws. He's the controller. But then, after having said that, then we come here. Then, as long as I follow the rules, then it doesn't matter what I do, right? Mm. Now we just take that a little further. Then, then the point is if I follow, then if I do whatever I want to do, then that's fine, right? And then, for those who like organization, then I make up the rules. You know what I'm saying? Because
yeah.
There's those who just do whatever they do, and there is no pattern, or they don't notice the pattern everybody else does, but, you know, they don't worry about it, and they're not expecting everybody else to follow the pattern. Mm. But then there's those who wants a structured environment, so they make the rules. Does that make sense? So it's just going these steps and steps further. So one will say, well, how does this happen? No, because the essential point is, I'm the controller and enjoyer, so therefore I do whatever I want to do. Right? So now whether you follow structure or not You know, and whether the structure is God-made or man-made. But it's still only when God's a person, then it changes and it becomes, you know, actually glorious. Right? And then this case is that how much do you involve Krishna? So is Krishna the primal point or is he the secondary? You know? I mean, in the mind, of course, is the ultimate goal. Krishna is the primary. But in the actual practical application, being conditioned, we may not notice how much we're involved in Krishna or not. You know what I'm saying? That's why Krishna doesn't take it as a fault. It's the beginning stage. And with time, that will go away. You know what I'm saying? So we only speak about it to make it clear that it exists, not that, you know, oh, you don't have Krishna there, so therefore you're a nonsense rascal. No, that's not the point. Krishna says you're saintly. Mm. Right? Because the devotee is attached to different things. And so Krishna may not be the primary element there. Right? But the point is, in a sense, ultimately Krishna is. That's what matters, right? That's why the process starts with giving up the result. It's for Krishna. Even if, you know, you identify that this is mine and it's my activity and I got the result, but the result goes to Krishna. So all those points are weak, but that the result went to Krishna, then it makes it all perfect. Right? Then as we understand, I'm serving the Krishna, I start to do this for Krishna, how he likes it done, then it becomes more perfect. So that's why the person is still a sadhu. It's perfect. But there are weaknesses. And we're not saying that there's not weaknesses. Right? So on the day-to-day, but then on the final test, then, you know, it's going to depend a lot on how strong or weak it was. But at the same time, if one's dependent upon Krishna, anybody can pass the test. Does that make sense? Because all it means is just thinking of Krishna. That's all. Yes?
In this thing, even a sadhu is not a pure uttama. There's always a need to accept the authority.
Well, even the Uttamadhikari is accepting authority. The Shastra is there, Guru is there, the Vaishnavas are there. So that's not a problem. Because you have authority on the spiritual platform, right? It means that Krishna is the Adi Guru, and then down through him, from him coming in the Parampara is the line of devotees, the line of instruction, right? So what was discussed before is that God comes himself, or sends the devotee, to give the instruction by which one, by following, will get out of the material world, right? So there's that line of authority. And generally no one has too much a problem with that. You know, it means the principle no one has any problem with, right? God is there, he made the rules, we follow the rules, it's good. Like that. So then we may have a difficulty with our understanding of the rules because of the overlap that we'll see in authority of managing the material world. Right? This problem of what we're saying in the deification is that we're managing in this way, but to do it the way, you know, we understand Krishna's saying, then it's a bit more complicated, but it would be so much easier to do it this way, and it's for Krishna anyway, the result's for Krishna. So then the tendency would be to do that simpler way. And the result's for Krishna, so you get benefit like that. But at the same time, is because it's the simplified, you have to see was it just you had a very clear understanding of the principle Krishna was talking about, so in a very easy way you got it done? Or you just saw that there was a simpler way to do it, so you did it, but you didn't see a bigger picture that 6 months down the line there'll be a problem. You know what I'm saying? So that kind of thing. So now we want to control that. Now, in management, there's a hierarchy. There has to be someone in charge and people who follow. And that keeps going back also. So you have these two. One is that you know, your managerial or administrative authority, or just, you know, socially organization, you know, and then you have the spiritual authority. So for the Uttamadhikari, then he has the spiritual authority, he follows that perfectly. But he has no problem being in the material world that someone who has a particular skill may be the managerial authority over him, even though they're a neophyte and he's an Uttamadhikari. It doesn't matter because you're just trying to get something done. Right? You know, they know how to decorate the temple, and so then they then they take charge, and it's not a problem. You work under them, because that's what you do in the spiritual world. Is someone's in charge, and you work under them. Because there, the spiritual authority and the managerial authority is the same thing. Like that. Here, you know, if it's the same, it's ideal, but if it's separate, it doesn't matter. It's like diksha and siksha. They're the same, it's ideal, but if they're separate, it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? So those kind of elements are there. So they wouldn't have any problem functioning in a society where the managers are not that advanced, because you'll see the advancement in his practice, the sadhana, or when they give class or dealing with devotees. You know? Does that make sense? Because it's in their own personal practice that's where you see it. It's not because you're a better manager that makes you, that's what your quality of advancement is. We'll tend to connect the two, because one is any art practiced for more time, generally you become better at it. If there's a carpenter who's been a carpenter for the last 40 years and one who's been for 10 years, you would take it naturally that the one with 40 years has more experience, therefore is better. So if we say, yes, he's been a temple president for the last 30 years, we'll generally take it he's quite good at it. You know, and we'll also take it that means he's more advanced. But it can be that it is like that. That would be ideal. That would be proper. But it can be he's just a good manager, focused on that, did it for Krishna, but he has his attachments and he hasn't really moved on from there. But, you know, he's able to, you know, give the proper time and effort into this temple management. So therefore the temple is going very well. Right? And so you could take it on the thing on how to manage a temple, you take him as a serious authority. But when it comes to some interpretation of a purport and how to apply it into a situation, he may not be the perfect person to ask. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, doing that much service for so long, there should be some understanding. You know what I'm saying? Because any devotion rendered, then knowledge and detachment are automatic. So there would be something. But now if they're taking advantage of it or not, you know. So it can be they also have so much understanding, but because they're so absorbed in the management, they don't even notice what they have. Does that make sense? You know, because they're busy managing, so they're not necessarily giving a class. If they do, it'll always turn into just a ghosting. You know, stuff like that. Does that make sense? Yes.
It seems also that sometimes we have very advanced devotees who may not have the best communication skills.
Communication, managerial ability. See, the point is communication skill is still a material quality of that particular conditioning. So if they don't have, it's fine. But it doesn't mean that they can't discuss Krishna consciousness. It just means you have to find that environment. So generally, privately, they do better than publicly. You know, so that's there. But it will be generally a little... It won't necessarily be there. Generally, you'll find is they can't communicate nicely when it comes to material arrangements. Right? But spiritual, then it's not necessarily that would be an obstacle at all. Because subtleties in the spiritual... Then it's like you catch it, you get more depth. If you don't catch it, still the main point is there. But in the management, you take it for granted that the subtlety is how it'll work, and then in your mind, you told everybody, and in everybody else's mind, you never mentioned anything. Yeah? So if you say, yes, so we wanted this, we can make it really nice, and so, because this guy's coming, this and that. And then afterwards, he comes around and says, hey, where's this? Why didn't you put up the decorate? Why didn't you do this? And they go, you know, well, you never said anything. No, I said make it nice. You know, they say, well, how do we know nice means put up the decorations? Nice could mean make it clean. Nice could mean, you know, the brahmacharis are in the foyer fighting over Mahaprasad. You know, nice could mean so many things. You know, he'll have in his mind that when we did this festival that we did that, and this festival we did this, and that. So in his mind he put it all together, and that's nice. Does that make sense? But that's a management.
Yeah.
But if we say it's Krishna consciousness, you know, we should make everything nice so that everything's done nicely for Krishna. Then if somebody thinks nice means manage it nicely, someone else thinks decorate nicely, someone else means cook nicely for Krishna, it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? Because they're going to think according to their nature And so it'll work perfectly. So I would say you probably would find that discussing Krishna consciousness, there would be no problem. Right? Because there's no obstacle to the spiritual. But for material, that's where you find the problem.
Some devotees, they were asking one pujari at Manor. He'd been the pujari there for, I think, 25, 30 years. And so they wanted to know how they could fix themselves like him. So they asked him, why haven't you done any other service for so long? And he just looked at them, nobody asked. And then he went off. They were like...
And he's satisfied, so
that's why nobody
asked.
That was
he's
why.
Doing it so nice. Why? Okay. 15.9. The living entity, thus taking another gross body, obtains a certain type of... Didn't we just read this? No, we didn't. A certain type of ear, eye, tongue, nose, and sense of touch, which are grouped around the mind. He thus enjoys a particular set of sense objects. The living entity suffers when he adulterates his consciousness. Right? In other words, if the living entity adulterates his consciousness with the qualities of cats and dogs, I guess that's why before cats and dogs, human beings and cats and dogs were all put together. In his next, if he adulterates his consciousness with the qualities of cats and dogs, in his next life he gets a cat or dog body and enjoys. He can't have them both at once, you know, unless, of course, you become a cheetah, right? Then you can kind of get both. But consciousness is originally pure, like water. But if we mix water with a certain color, it changes. Similarly, consciousness is pure, for the spirit soul is pure. But consciousness is changed according to the association of the material qualities. Real consciousness is Krishna consciousness. When, therefore, one is situated in Krishna consciousness, he is in his pure life. But if his consciousness is adulterated by some type of material mentality, in the next life he gets a corresponding body. Right? So that would also go with the point that if he doesn't mix the consciousness, if it's pure, then he'll get a spiritual body. But if it's adulterated by some kind of material mentality, then he gets a material body. Right? Like, the point is, whatever is the nature of consciousness, then you get a corresponding body. It's pure, then a pure body. It's not pure, then you get a material body. Okay, so this suffering, so then we're going through the line, is that, okay, when his consciousness is adulterated, he gets the gross body. The gross body is the suffering, right? And then when you misuse the independence, then you get a gross body. Right? So you see is that it's all based on the consciousness. So the consciousness, you have the consciousness is independent of the Lord, you get a material body. The consciousness, you know, you're attached to this or that within the material sphere, you get that kind of body. Right? The consciousness maintains impure, you continue with that process. Your consciousness becomes pure, you go back to the spiritual realm. Right? So it's all consciousness. That makes sense. So it's a science. So they say, oh, that's theory. This is not. This is hard science. Because it explains exactly what goes on. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Maharaj, what does it say? And enjoys?
And enjoys. What? The cat and dog?
Yeah.
Because why would they want to be a cat or dog? Why would you think about a cat or dog? Right, you hate cats, and it just every time you walk around the corner, the cat's there and jumps on you. So you're just driving around the corner, and then this Big Mac truck comes out of nowhere. So then you think of the cat. Is that how it works?
No, I mean like.
The point is why would you be thinking of the cat and dog?
No, my focus is on about like
the cat or dog. What do we call about cat enjoyment or dog enjoyment?
Krishna says about you know, associating with different rules of nature, you know, and then he enjoys life, you know.
Yeah. So that's the point is that the pig is sitting there in the sewer you know, on a hot day, and he's happy. You're walking around out there, you know, with your head roasting in the sun. And he's not. He's in the sewer, and he's enjoying life. No?
He thinks he is.
And so do you. You understand?
But then
the only real enjoyment of the soul is in connection with Krishna.
So
anything else, that's not different. Therefore, then we can say the living entities, not only human beings and the cats and dogs, you know, but even the greater controllers. So the cats and dogs and humans get all thrown together. Because the point is that the living entity under the moat thinks he's enjoying. Because if you're the controller and enjoyer, then you're only going to be happy, you know, comfortable that you're enjoying. You want to control in a certain way. And so you arrange the situation. You have a particular set of senses that you've arranged the situation specifically for those senses. Right? You know, I say tailor-made, you know, like that. And so then getting that, you'll consider yourself happy. No?
Yeah, that's just saying the same thing again. He considers himself happy.
But everybody in the material world is considering themselves happy. There is no one who's happy.
But then he doesn't enjoy. Then he thinks he enjoys. Like he gets caught up by.
But we're taking it from their platform. We're going through this according. That's why he says, you know, how you say, one gets a. Individual soul is transmigrating from one body to another, and his present body and present activities are the background of his next body. Why didn't they say, you know, what was before? Or that? They're just saying is what you're in now, and according to that, is what is next.
Yeah.
So putting into the perspective of the living entity, he thinks he's enjoying. But I mean, that's all there is in this material world. If you have a reflection, you know, you have the mirror, everyone's dancing in the mirror, it's all happening like that. Is the reflections in the mirror enjoying?
No.
So they're not. But if you identify with one of them, then you'll think that's great. You know what I'm saying? So that's it. You know, so he enjoys. So in other words, he controls his environment and tries to enjoy the results of that. You know, in other words, this point is being made is that he suffers and he gets a body according to his consciousness. That's the point. If we're discussing whether it's his enjoyment or not, that's another topic. You know what I'm saying? So the point is that this is on consciousness, right? Specifically, if it's adulterated, the result you get another body, material.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It's in that kind of like, I don't know, is it third person or something? Is that what that is? You know, it's that allegorical style, you know, like King Paranjan.
No, it's just you're just stating facts, you know, in a very simple, straightforward way. The consciousness is polluted, you get another material body. Consciousness is not polluted, then you go back to Godhead. Is that okay? The foolish, 15:10. The foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature. But one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this. Because see, for God, it's not a problem that the living entities are trying to enjoy. It's not that by them enjoying, his enjoyment's any less. You know what I'm saying? It's he's enjoying anyway. So he doesn't have a problem that others may enjoy. The difficulty is that the level of enjoyment that you could gain and the level of enjoyment that you're getting, those are very different. You know, you're talking about unlimitedly, you know, billions of times difference in quality. So, therefore, and because the natural position is relationship with God, to avoid that relationship with God means that he will not be happy with that, because in that also you will not be happy in that. You know, your natural position is to relate, interact with God. So if you do that, then you and He are happy. Does that make sense? Because you're interacting, you know, and therefore the situation is auspicious for the living entity like that, then God is happy. You know what I'm saying? And so because He's happy, that's how you're going to be happy. So as Mataji pointed out the other day, is that, you know, spiritual life, you could say, is the ultimate, you know, self-centered activity, because it's just on the self. Because otherwise, we you know, it's on the body, it's on the mind, it's on our possessions. So it's not actually self-centered. You know, so here it's self-centered. So it's about the self. And you're getting the highest benefit. You know, so others are working for themselves, but they're getting lower benefits. Here they're getting the ultimate benefit. Does that make sense? The foolish cannot understand the change of body and their stay in a particular body. Every living entity is quitting his body under certain circumstances. He is living under certain circumstances, and he's enjoying under certain circumstances, under the spell of material nature. As a result, he is suffering from different kinds of happiness and distress, under the illusion of sense enjoyment. Right? So here's your answer. Here is it. He's under the illusion of sense enjoyment. So that's why I always mention enjoy, because everyone does everything to be happy. Right? You know what I'm saying? It's cold, so the dog, you know, is sitting over the shade. The sun moves. He gets up, goes over where the sun is, lays back down. Right? You know, if it goes again, he gets up, moves over. If it's in the summer, then he's in the shade. If the sun moves and he's out in the sun, he gets up, moves over into the shade. So he's doing it to be happy. Right? Because then you consider, I'm enjoying. Right? Does that make sense? So then that's the principle. So God doesn't have a problem with that. The problem is that the living entity is left its natural position, so they're not happy. Right? And that happiness is naturally in relationship with the Lord. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, he can use the point that they're enjoying. We wouldn't use that term. Right? Because we don't like it that others are enjoying. Right? We're not enjoying. Nobody's going to enjoy. And if you can't enjoy this material world, everybody should know that. So why use the term enjoyment? You know? Yeah, they're hawks and dogs. They're suffering. You know? It's that, you know? You know? It's that, you know what I'm saying? No, there's a dog. They think life is fine. Right? The cat thinks it's fine. Right? You know, the dog's laying down there, you know, next to the fire. The cat's laying on top, right? So the cat thinks, great, this dog's nice and warm, right? And the dog's thinking, wow, this is great, this cat's nice and warm. You know what I'm saying? So both of them are enjoying. Does that make sense?
Nice example.
Yeah.
Multi-layered.
Huh? Multi-layered, yeah. As a result, okay, persons who are everlastingly fooled by lust and desire lose all power to understand their change of body and their stay in a particular body. They cannot comprehend it. Those who have developed spiritual knowledge, however, can see that the spirit is different from the body and is changing its body and enjoying in different ways. A person with such knowledge can understand how the conditioned living entity is suffering in this material existence. So he can say, so now he can say he can understand how they're suffering. They think they're enjoying, but he can see how they're suffering. So then we could also take it from the point that it's not that by how do you say? By having developed spiritual knowledge, then you're wondering how do we say the word they're all enjoying when actually they're suffering. Right?
And that's what I think that's what I meant.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying here, because of developed spiritual knowledge.
Yeah. How you mercy are.
But the point is here is that they think that, so this is the whole point. They're all talking about the living entity. You know, the individual living entity thinks he's enjoying. So now we come to that point is that by this change in the consciousness, right? The independence is not being applied properly. So therefore, was Pandava Bandava sitting back there?
Yeah.
He was. Because I looked and he wasn't there, and then I'm talking and I look back and he's there. I look away and he's not there again. Am I just, you know, thinking that he should be here and he's here? It's just, you know, it would be nice if he was here so then I'm seeing things. Okay, so others also saw. If it's an illusion, then we're all in this together. Okay. So that process is that he's misusing his independence, so he comes under the modes of nature, right? So therefore he suffers. That suffering means that he has a material body. A material body is based on his consciousness, right? He's misapplied his the overall concept of consciousness from being I am servant of God to please the Lord to I am the controller and enjoyer, right? That being in place, that brings him under the material. Then what specific ways he wants to control and enjoy, that he gets that specific kind of body, right? And that will continue until he comes back to the transcendental position that I am servant to the Lord, right? Like that. So, therefore, someone under that, they cannot understand how this is working, right? So only someone who is independent. Okay. We had a discussion while you were gone. That I was looking and you weren't there. Then I looked, you were there. Then I looked again, you weren't there. So then I had a doubt whether you actually were there. Okay. Then Vritti. Lesson 3 described the precarious condition of the demoniac soul struggling for existence in the material world. Lesson 4, in contrast, describes the divine souls who cooperate with the Lord. So then here, also looking at that, is defined, because you've defined before this, the divine and the demoniac. So being going from body to body, that's the demoniac. Because generally we take it that going from body to body, we're the nice guys. Then there's the really nasty ones. They're the demoniac. You know, but what we also have to remember is that you'll have various levels of definition of this. You know, the full, complete is, if it's in connection with the Lord, then it's correct. And if it's not, it's wrong. Right? Then, within what's wrong, then you have, you know, those who are, following the laws of God but not acknowledging God. Right? And those then who are not, they're wrong. Right? They're the, you know, so in other words, those on the transcendental platform, those are divine. Those who are not, that's demoniac. Within the demoniac, then the ones who accept, you know, the authority of the scriptures and all that, then there are divine, and the ones who don't are demoniac. Then amongst that, then ones who, you know, have some kind of, you know, follow social rules and don't bother each other, they're divine, and the ones who bother everybody else, they're demoniac. Does that make sense? So it keeps going down. So you always have is, there's the ultimate point of following the laws of God to please God. That's the actual standing. Standard. Following the laws of God for yourself, then that's pious, but it's not actually the standard. It's still self-centered. Then not following laws God's, God's laws, then that brings it down again. Does that make sense? So you can always find within it, you know what I'm saying, you're trying to butter your toast, okay? So then the point is if you pick up the knife from the wrong end, that's wrong. If you pick it up the right way, then it's, yeah, and that's the wrong. Yes, and the other one's demoniac, right? Does that make sense? So you always have, you get smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. You know, I say if you picked it up from the wrong side, then there's the flatter side and there's the, you know, the edge. So if you use the flatter side, you'll get better results than if you use the edge.
So divine.
Right? You know, or if you use the edge, then if you use the edge on the back or the edge on the front, whichever one's more flat, one's curved, one's flat, you know, and then does that make sense? It just keeps going down.
Buttering when the toast is hot, it's
That's another whole discussion. Whether one butters when toast is hot or cold, like that. As before, there's many different opinions on these things.
It should be about getting as much butter as possible, shouldn't it?
That one would expect.
Yeah.
But then there are those that it's not about the butter adds to it, but it's the crunch that's important. I had that the other day because, I mean, I was saying about, you know, put it like this, and they kind of looked at me, are you crazy? He says, you know, then it becomes soft and you lose the crunch. And I was kind of thinking, who cares about the crunch? It's about the butter. And I say, no, it's not. It's about the crunch. You know? So then I think, oh, okay. You know, I didn't realize that there were, you know, different schools of thought.
This is where our paths part.
Yeah.
We've come a long way together at this point.
All things must come to an end.
Yes. Okay. So now, lesson four, in contrast, describe the divine souls, right? So before, that was the demoniac. In other words, demoniac are going to go from body to body, whether there's more piety, less piety, you know, like that, you know, more sophistication, less, it doesn't matter. That's the cycle. Lesson four. The spiritualists remain in complete harmony with the plan of God by cooperation. Right, because that's before. You use your independence not cooperatively, then you end up in that cycle. Right? By going through those layers, right? The first is that you come into the material world. You know, that brings you here. Then you're under the mode. So that means then, in secondary, now how you want to control and enjoy, that then defines how you're going to stay here. So when you understand that I am the servant of God, right, that corrects the primary in fault. And then you engage your nature in the Lord's service, that corrects the secondary. Right? As a support to correcting the primary. Does that make sense? Yeah. Therefore, without being attached to the fruits of activities, this is 3:9. 3:19, yeah. Cool. One should act as a matter of duty. For, by working without attachment, one attains the supreme. Right? One attains the supreme. Now, whether you claim, or you want to come to the platform of the supreme supreme. Right? But there's only one supreme. Right, so.
That's the supreme supreme.
Yes.
The other is a band.
Yeah, I mean, they're good singers, but they're not. Yes, the perfect activity is to act on behalf of the supreme. Arjuna is told that he should fight in the battle of Kurukshetra for the interest of Krishna, because Krishna wanted him to fight. To be a good man or a nonviolent man is a personal attachment, but to act on behalf of the supreme is to act without attachment for the result. Right. So here, being a good man or a nonviolent is a personal attachment. But we'll take it. No, it's good. No, it's a personal attachment. You call it good. You know, like we had the other day with the nutrition or violence, non-violence, all these different things that come up. And we'll say, no, they're inherently good. No, that's our personal attachment. Right? That's our personal attachment. But to act on behalf of the Supreme is to act without attachment to the result. Because then you can engage that area that you like to be involved in, but for the Supreme, so the results for Him. Then it's in harmony. Otherwise, we say it's good. And not that it's not good, but there's no connection to the Supreme. So you're just a nice demon instead of a not nice demon. That's all. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing. So the demoniac mentality means it's not connected to the Lord. You know, so better to bump into a nice person with demoniac mentality than a not nice person with demoniac mentality. Right? Or as we were discussing, better Hitler on acid than Hitler not on acid.
One devotee actually pointed out that Hitler was on amphetamine.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Because the guy is on acid, it's just he'll sit there and
Yeah,
but he's on amphetamines, then he's going to go out there and, you know, try to take over the world. But, I'm saying the hippies didn't try to take over the world.
Really.
Yeah, so that's the point. Yeah, if he had said, you know, Hitler on meth or something, then you go, then you get it. Then you start getting
some serious Hitler there.
Yeah, that's, like that. Yeah. Vedic rituals. Oh, okay. That is the perfect action of the highest degree recommended by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Right? That is perfect action of the highest degree. In other words, good is you know, you would say that that's perfect action. But that good being done for Krishna, then that is the highest degree. So the point is that it's done for the Lord. Because whether you're the violent man or the non-violent man, that doesn't matter. Kings are supposed to, in times of need, be violent. Right? If the police aren't violent with someone who's bad, you know, it's just like that. You have some people, and they have, you know, taking a, you know, thing of opinion. Some people have hijacked a plane; it's full of people, and they have their guns and bombs and everything like that. So that will be considered not a good situation, right? So now, if then, you know, some guy walks up there and says, you know, okay, you know, you're nice, you know, you're very dedicated to your cause and all that, and that, but it would be really nice if you just let all these people go, and, you know, all things like that. So we might think that might not be so effective, but then, you know, if suddenly out of nowhere, you know, five guys dressed all in black go in there and shoot them all in, you know, in 3 seconds, and then everybody's freed, then we'll say that was great, right? Why? Because that it was violence. But we'll say, no, but the violence protected all these people, right? Because these other people were going to use violence. So therefore, a violent situation, if you can correct it in a non-violent way, great. But if not, then you have to use violence to correct it. So therefore, the police are there, the army is there, all these different elements are there, because there are those who do not work according to what they should be doing. Does that make sense? So in that way, then, to establish the proper order of things, violence is necessary. Only because there are people who are, you know, violent. Now, if you have people who are non-violent and use violence against them, that would be considered improper. Is that what you're saying? Yes.
But we also have like a definition of violence that is something that's not beneficial for Krishna consciousness.
Basically, violence would mean, yes, that it doesn't have a ultimate benefit in Krishna consciousness. Right? So that aspect would mean whatever is done whimsically is violence.
So Arjuna fighting is not violence.
Yeah, so his going to the forest would be.
Yeah.
So just like the modern, you know, how you say, enlightened intellectual may consider so many things to be non-violent, but technically because it has nothing to do with the Lord, it's all violence to the soul. Or that has social violent problems. You know what I'm saying? That they only figure out 10, 20, 30 years later. You know, they followed this, but now it's like there's no concept of authority or there's no other things like this. So one would say that it was peaceful, but it wasn't peaceful. It was anti-authority. So you can't call that peaceful. You know what I'm saying? You know, it was political. You don't call something political peaceful. You know? Peace means living in harmony. That's a different discussion. You might have a political system that's more harmonious, but it doesn't mean that it by nature is like that.
You could maybe even go as far as to say politics is inherently non-harmonious.
Not necessarily. It can be done. Like we see Yudhishthira Maharaj and others. They can fight because it's part of the social system. You require it. You know, so that's what we're saying. You require it. But at the same time, it has to be directed by what is harmonious, which is means by the Brahmins. But they are directed by the Shastra. So that means it's not whimsical. So that's the point, is you can't have the mode of passion and ignorance be the lead of society. You have to have the mode of goodness. Right? And mode of goodness is not even enough. It has to be pure goodness. So it has to be following the scriptures in connection with the Lord. Right? Then that is the ultimate perfect action to the highest degree. So when it's connected to the Lord, then it's the perfect action. You know what I'm saying? Then there may be some discussions about the detail of its application may be better or not so, you know, effective. But that is done for Krishna and the result is for Krishna. Then that's perfect of the highest degree. Then within highest degree you have variation. Right? So that's why a devotee doing something for Krishna, even if it's not socially acceptable or it's done so well in a sophisticated way, it's still of the highest degree. Right? Now it's just a matter of working out that within the highest degree is of better and better quality. Does that make sense? So that's why whatever the devotees are doing, they're trying to do it for Krishna, then it's seen as progressive. Now then they can learn what is more in line with doing it for Krishna. Does that make sense? You know, that always can be done.
Why is that? The wise can see non-violence in violence and violence in non-violence?
Yes. Are you starting to see like that?
Just with the Arjuna example, you know, it looks pretty violent, what he's doing. His activities would look violent.
But there's a non-violence because it's being done for the Supreme.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And then those who are, like you said with the example of political, where they're doing anti-authoritarian violence in non-violence.
Yeah, because the point is that means ultimately, if you break down authority there, where else do you break it down? Because God's the ultimate authority.
Yeah.
Right? Because on both lines, the spiritual line and the organizational line, he's the head. Because if you break it down in the authority, in the teachers or in the the community heads or in the governance like that, you know, in the intellectuals or, you know, then you break it down in authority. That's what we don't see, is that someone that means you have a revolution, right? What's the problem with the revolution? Right? They revolt, they may get some result, but then within some time it changes again. Because the people are just there going along. They respect authority, but they don't know what to do about it. They're not happy that they're not being dealt with in a proper way by the authority. But they're accepting authority. Then you go and say that, you know, they're bad authorities, we can remove them. So then the public goes in and removes them. Right? But now if you want to organize them, you have to have an authority. Now if that next authority doesn't do things how they are pleased with, they'll remove him also. So now his authority is only there to please us, rather than the element that we're supposed to assist authority. Right? It's supposed to be authority is trying to please you, but you're also trying to surrender and serve authority. Right? So they look at authority from authority's viewpoint, not from their own viewpoint. Does that make sense? So it breaks down. So what happens is they become the authority. And then that means things will be whimsical. There is no higher authority, it's just whatever we feel. Right? So that's why it's the mode of ignorance. Because where's the director? Each person feels differently. So how do you organize that? At least mode of passion, there's a clear line of authority. I mean, in this way, we're taking by that definition that anything done connects with the Lord is non-violent because the soul is engaged in its proper activity. Anything that's not done in connection with God consciousness is violent because it's against the nature of the living entity. The living entity will suffer because of that. So we wouldn't directly say that this is that, you know what I'm saying, it's in that category. If it's connected to the Lord, then it's nonviolent because it's progressive for the soul. If it's not in connection with the Lord, it's actually violent because it's against the nature of the soul.
Can we be connected to the Lord without the principle of personality?
How would one?
Yes, I'm okay.
No, you can't. It means you have to have. Yeah. But I mean, what I'm saying is that there's a progression there. I wouldn't just take it automatically. You know, because otherwise, without knowing the progression, someone would take it and apply it, and then it wouldn't be, you know, because then they would be applying it according to their personal attachment, right, instead of the philosophical definition. You know, because that's where we have a problem. When it's defined on the ultimate sense, you know, just in just the philosophical point, then we generally don't have much problem with it. But when we try to apply it in the secondary, you know, within the realm of our attachments, that's when all the difficulties come in. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? And we say, your food should be offered to Krishna. No one has any problem. But we say, you should offer this kind of food to Krishna, then immediately there's a problem. Does that make sense? Means you can go out and just a general group of people, devotees, karmis, anyone, that says, because we're getting everything from God, we should show that appreciation, you know, for what God given us by what we get, offering that back to God. And everyone would say, wow, that's great, yeah, that's nice. You know, but then if we say, you know, it should be vegetarian, then, you know, half the audience goes, hey, wait a minute, you know. You understand? So it's always going to be the dealing with the consciousness, I'm the controller and enjoyer, that will get, but when we bring it down to how we're trying to control and enjoy, so our personal attachment is there, that's when the differences of opinions come in. So in other words, if there's no need to address that, always stick on the primary level. And if any doubt comes up because of wording you've used or examples, take it back to the primary level. Right, but once the primary level is established, then one can deal with the secondary level. Right?
Is it also why it's very important to have a personal guidance?
Personal guidance.
An attachment.
It is. It's good, but that personal guidance is the community of devotees. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, if you have one person that guides you on everything, great. But if not, you get guidance in one area from one person and guidance in another area for someone else, and that, you know what I'm saying? You know, like in, you have, you know, cooking the certain ones, then you are inspired by kirtan somebody else, and management someone else, and their personal sadhana someone else. So in that way one can get inspiration from so many different places. That's why it always mentions the association of the Vaishnavas. You know, the first point is to approach the guru. But having done that, then one continues the next stages in the process, always in the association of the devotees. You know. Yes.
I mean, authority means something which is in line with Guru Sadhu and Shastra. Always.
Authority is, it means something in line with Guru Sadhu and Shastra. Depends upon what you mean by in line with Guru Sadhu and Shastra. It means that the work itself, its goal, is to, you know, the result is for in line with Guru Sadhu Shastra, or the actual method of management that they're using is in line with Guru Sadhu Shastra. You know what I'm saying? Because this is what we're meaning about the primary and secondary. Is that the point is that the person's managing, and in his mind he's doing this to please Krishna. So that's correct. The point is then on the secondary level, he's applying his conditioning, you know, into the principle of management. So he may be doing a good job of managing or may not be doing a good job of management.
But his motivation is to please Krishna.
But his motivation is correct. So therefore, there'll be spiritual benefit, but you need to, because you're working with devotees, you need to be able to adjust that within the conditioning it's applied properly.
How
Does that make sense? So it's not that, because it's not applied properly, it's not devotional. Or because it's devotional, it doesn't matter what I do. You know, there's two things. It's ultimately it's for Krishna, but then how well am I doing it for Krishna? Does that make sense? So then it's just, you know, judged by the result. The devotees are happy, you know, you get the result like that, then you're doing okay. But if you're not getting the result, or you're getting the result and nobody's happy, you know, does that make sense? Or if everybody's happy and not getting the results, and that I'm not sure about that.
That's weird.
Yeah. They were happy you didn't get the results, you know. So, your service to the Vaishnavs is to not do anything, because if you do something, then they begin to disturb. So you're not doing anything, the Vaishnavs are very happy.
Right.
Then
you,
yeah.
As a subordinate, how you would deal with the situation when it is not, boss are not in line with Guru Sahib and Shastra, why is them is not?
The point is the mechanics of it correct or not? So it means, where's the problem? As we said, there's two.
Mm-hmm.
There's the mechanics of it, and there's the consciousness. No?
Let's say first the consciousness is correct, mechanic is not correct.
Okay, so then you can point out that different mechanics would work very nice.
You give suggestions.
That's not an option.
Sometimes.
Say, no, well, we're fun. We shoot the guy and then do it the right way. Anyway, you know what I'm saying? You know, so that's there. And if it's not, then you do it. And if you can, you do it however is the best you can do it for Krishna, because it's being done for Krishna, right? The mechanics are right. Then managerially, there's nothing wrong, just the consciousness is not right. But if your consciousness is right, then you get the benefit from doing it for Krishna. So in other words, there's not really a need to not follow authority.
Somewhere else.
You want to know about down at the post office. The point is if you're working for somebody, then that's just kind of the way it goes. You don't like it, go work for someone else. You know what I'm saying? Because they're doing what they think is the right thing to do. You have an opportunity, you can say something, do. You know? And if not, then...
Don't.
Then, yeah. Either don't and...
Change job.
Yeah, change job. Or you can say something and then... They will inspire you to change your job. So either way, you know, it ends up that way. At least, but at the same time, the second one may not come on your resume. So. Mm-hmm. Vedic rituals, like prescribed sacrifices, are performed for purification of impious activities that were performed in the field of sense gratification. Right? So, means the field of sense gratification, if it's not done for a higher purpose, then it's sense gratification, right? So it's impious. So, by the Vedic rituals and that, then they purify these impious activities by bringing them in line with, you know, what's the proper way to do things. Right? But still, one has to bring it to Krishna, right? Then that's. But action in Krishna consciousness is transcendental to the reactions of good or evil work. Right? You have good work or evil work, but it's transcendental to that because it's pleasing the Lord. Right? These other things are not. Are nice, but they don't actually deal on the platform of the living entity, the soul. Right? The Krishna conscious person has no attachment for the result, but acts on behalf of Krishna alone. Right? Because results, that's where it's, means you do an activity for a result, right? A result is there because of some concept of relationship. So if the relationship is with God, then the result is for God. Right? If relationship's between you and dead matter, then it's about what you're going to get from dead matter. Right? But if it's for Krishna, then it's a matter of we see there, then it's what's going to be pleasing to Krishna. Because otherwise, we don't see Krishna in it. Technically, we're dealing with dead matter. You know, we'll say it's a person, and it's this, you know, my friend, or my, you know, some other relationship. But actually, you're dealing with dead matter, because the body is not the friend. You know what I'm saying? He engages, a Krishna conscious person has no attachment for the results, but acts on behalf of Krishna alone. He engages in all kinds of activities, but is completely not attached. So all kinds of activities means whatever is his prescribed duties. It doesn't matter. All those kinds of things he can do. But he's not attached, because it's for Krishna. Because we'll say, okay, well, only those things not attached. But what about, you know, what about dealing in the world? He says all kinds of activities. That's what it means. All the variety of activities. You don't get a broader variety of activities than what's defined by Varnashram. Right? Because most people, they're in one place within that, and that's their world. But to understand Varnashram, you have to understand everybody's world. You know, but if not, at least your world. 320. Kings such as Janaka attain perfection solely by performance of prescribed duties. Therefore, just for the sake of educating the people in general, you should perform your work. So Janaka, just by performance of prescribed duties, but he did that by doing it for the Supreme. Right? So that was it. He didn't do something else, but he engaged his occupational duties in the Lord's service. Right? He had different devotees, they would offer different things. So his prescribed duties. Right? So therefore, by doing that, then you set a proper example. Right? So you get the benefit, everyone else gets the benefit. Win-win. Padasavan. That's more in connection generally with the devotees and tadiya and everything like that. Occupation sometimes is categorized in dasyam, like that. But it's to be understood it's not the varnashram that is the devotional service. That's why Rupa Goswami in Nectar Devotion, you know, goes to, you know, great length to explain dasyam doesn't mean varnashram. Dasya means engaging yourself in the Lord's service. So that means you're engaging Varnashram. It's not the Varnashram, it's the devotional service.
That's how the imperfection was engaged there.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. So Varnashram is Sambandha and Dasyam is Abhideya?
Yeah, you could say that. It's just how you situate yourself. It's the field. But Abhideya is what you do with it. So therefore, that field you connect to Krishna, so it happens to be Varnashram, so you connect it to Krishna. So it's whatever, you know, whatever it is, you mean looking at it very big or looking at it very small, you know. Does that make sense? So it's like you look in the basket and there's potatoes and nothing else. So that's the field. Then you engage that in Krishna's service. That's the devotion. So it's not that the potatoes are devotion. So in that way, Varnashram is not devotion. Right? And it's not the symptom of devotion. Maybe the symptom of piety, but not of devotion. Devotion is the engagement. Is that so? Yes.
In history, do you know there are some examples of like Kshatriya, who are like being in a position like Arjuna, who's fighting the all his family members. In the past it was like a similar example of the situation.
Well, are there?
Yes.
Means it's not exactly the same. That's kind of unique in itself. That one. Because, you know, otherwise why? Means there's common elements that are brought out here and there, you know, but what's chosen is something that gets the point across. So then that's what will be the most full You know what I'm saying? You won't have a fratricidal war as big as that. You know? You know, because, but, you know, it's like mentioned, the two greatest battles, you know, that have ever happened in the universe, then is, you know, the Kurukshetra battle and Ravana and Ram, you know. So, but, you mean, ultimately the demoniac mentality of that greed and just wanting more, that lust is there, so it's being applied to something that's not yours. So in one it's to the kingdom and the other it's to their wife. But you know, so you know what I'm saying, so basis for you know, proper for war. But you know, it's not A Krishna conscious person acts in order to give a good example. Lord Krishna and Arjuna, the Lord's eternal friend, had no need to fight in a battle of Kurukshetra, but they fought to teach people in general that violence is also necessary in a situation where good arguments fail. Right? So you start with the good arguments. Right? If that fails, then there's battle, because it says of political principles, then good arguments is the best one to use. But if that doesn't work, then the other most effective is war. Right? Because giving gifts and threatening and all that might work, might not work. Right? But also, war, you're not sure of the outcome. Right? But conciliation, then that generally works. You keep talking until you work it out. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's like, if you have a discussion and you lose the discussion, you still have your briefcase and all your papers, right? But you have a battle and you lose, then you don't have anything to work with. You know, does that make sense? So it is, you know, considered second on effectively getting something done, but the first is always conciliation. So good arguments. Although one who is situated in Krishna consciousness may not have any interest in the world, he still acts to teach the public how to live and how to act, right? Because they're working on the external platform. So if they live and act in a proper way, then it will work out nicely for them. But if they don't act in the proper way, then how are they going to progress? Because the progression, they're taking it as external, right? And so if the externals is going in a Krishna conscious direction, then there's progress. Right, then you can try to, with association, add the consciousness. You make sense? So that's why then there's an example. Because it's not what you're doing that's proper. You know? It's the consciousness of which it's done. Right?
It's also quite an extreme example, whereas like on battlefields, you know, the if Arjuna is able to do it and think of Krishna, then once you'd be able to, you know, rush around in the kitchen with the pots.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's good. You know, if you have a problem with your brother or sister, you know, you should be able to work it out. You know? Like that.
That's a 640 million.
Yeah, yeah, like that. You know, so it's just, of course, your mother may not appreciate what you did to the pillows in the living room, but, you know,
at least you
worked it out. You know?
Pillow fight for Krishna.
Yes. Experienced persons in Krishna consciousness can act in such a way that others will follow. So experienced persons means when you're able to perform the activity nicely in Krishna consciousness, then that sets a very good example. Right? But even if not, if the consciousness is correct, that sets an example. At least you're trying to do things for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? But the point is not here, is because you're talking about devotees, it's not that you're expert at the material activity, therefore you'll set the example. No, because if it's not Krishna conscious, what's the use? Right? Otherwise, why pick Arjuna? Why not pick somebody else on the battlefield? You know what I'm saying? I mean, if you look at it, Arjuna fought through the whole 18 days, right? Mm-hmm. Abhimanyu, in one morning, half a day, took out one Akshahini of the enemy. So if he had stayed around till sunset, that would have been two, right? They had 11. So basically speaking, one quarter of the army he would have removed in one day. You know what I'm saying? But Arjuna was there fighting through the whole 18 days. So Abhimanyu is quite good. You know, he's not bad. Right? So, but he's not the prominent person. Arjuna is the prominent person because he's connecting it to Krishna. Does that make sense? Okay. So, continue with this 18. Hard to say, pages.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki,
Jai.
Janatai Gaurav.